Roni's Own Media and RoniesOwn.com proudly present the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. Hey, everybody. We're back. It's the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast, Episode 5. Mm-hmm. And we are your hosts and your pilot and co-pilot, Jeff Roni.
And Colleen Roni.
Excellent. And the only movie we'll be showing is not a movie. It's Once Upon a Time.
No movie.
So this is going to be covering the fifth episode of Once Upon a Time, which is That Still Small Voice.
Yes.
And I don't think we've ever really kind of talked about the name of it, the name of the episodes.
We did mention Snow Falls and how that has double meaning. So, and they do have very definite key points or connections to the actual story. So, yeah, we've talked a little bit about it. But.
So, I would say there's two schools of thought with the title.
Right.
One is, I would say, from a Christian perspective, the still small voice, you know, could be the Holy Spirit or God talking to you or whatever. And then there's another side of it, which is your conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the core of this episode.
Yes.
So let's talk about the high points of the episode, and then we'll jump in.
Yeah. From this point forward, I think we're going to do a really short recap just to let everybody know. As much as I enjoyed giving a play-by-play, most of you listeners have probably already seen the episode and don't need me to tell you exactly how it went. So we're going to skip through and just kind of talk about the big high points. This episode was the backstory or the origin story of Jiminy Cricket and how he became Jiminy Cricket. And we see also, you know, Henry trying to convince Archie that he is Jiminy Cricket through their time spent in the mine shaft. The next thing on the show was that there was the building or the blossoming of the relationship between Mary Margaret Blanchard and David Nolan, which then mirrors the blossoming or relationship that Prince Charming and Snow White had. So those are the two big points that I saw, the big story plot points that I saw in the episode.
Perfect. Cool. So I think what we're going to do, we'll change it up a little bit. We did get some feedback. We love feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making some tweaks based on the suggestions. So that's why really cutting down the recap, and we're just going to jump into the meat of the show.
Sure.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to play a couple of voicemails. These are great. You haven't heard them, but they're really good.
It's great.
Okay, the first one, here we go. And thank you so much for sending for calling in your voicemails. We really appreciate it. So if you're listening and you say, well, I want to do it, we invite you to do it.
Absolutely.
It's really a lot of fun. So here we go.
Hi, guys. This is Joel from Green Bay, Wisconsin. In regards to the Once Upon a Time podcast, great show, big fan. Just some observations I had. I don't know if they're legit or far out left field. But the concept of the enchanted wood that is used throughout the series, the tree that was made for the baby's wardrobe, and I think there might be some logic in that the wood that's enchanted was also used in part for Rumpelstiltskin's jail cell that we see as the bars to his jail cell, and this wood has kind of effect that keeps magic from happening. Second idea that I also had was who is Sheriff Graham? In the first episode, we see when Emma is in jail after crashing the car, that Geppetto is also in the jail. Could possibly Sheriff Graham be Pinocchio? We also understand through the fairy tales that Pinocchio was actually created from an enchanted piece of wood. So if Sheriff Grimm is possibly Pinocchio, could he be immune from the magic of Regina, or the evil princess, whatever is going on in that situation? One other topic of observation is Ruby and the obsession she has with the wolf figure that was hanging in her car. We also heard about Granny's comments about when Regina was going to be dating Pan up and down the Eastern Seaboard. Is Ruby afraid of the big bad wolf, or is she enamored by the wolf or bad boys, so to speak? We also see that Ruby gave her car to Cinderella when Cinderella tried to vacate Storybrooke. Is it possible that Ruby was clearing the way to go after Cinderella's man, Una, possibly? Just some topic of conversation. Thank you much. Have a great day.
Excellent, Joel.
Wow, yeah.
A lot of cool stuff in there.
There was stuff I certainly hadn't thought of.
So I'll try to remember. My pen would not work, and I was trying to jot down. So let's talk about the tree first.
The tree, right.
So the tree is enchanted. There are some fairy tales that do deal with trees that protect whatever. I mentioned in the last podcast that one of the tweets from Cinderella said the bars of Rumpelstiltskin's cell are alive, or they're living. So okay. In following with what Joel was saying, is maybe those are the roots of that tree. Possibly.
Oh, possibly. Okay. Possibly.
Or maybe they were made from it, just like he was saying.
True. Yeah.
And that would kind of... The magical tree with the bars for Rumpelstiltskin's cell would fit with the idea that once he is in there, he can't get out because magic cannot get him out.
Right. Magic would be the only thing that would trap him.
Okay.
Is what he said. Yeah. So, but what... This is just spawning an interesting thought. So remember when Cinderella, when Prince Thomas told her that the quill was magic, and that anyone who used it would lose their magic. But he didn't say lose, if I remember right. It was frozen.
Mm-hmm.
So...
No, but I think you're onto something. I think...
What I'm saying is, mm-hmm. even if the bars are made from the magical tree, that's a great, great observation and a really interesting theory to go behind. But I'm thinking, even if they're not magical... Maybe they're just a tree, or right. Maybe they're rock. I don't know. It's hard to tell because it's kind of dark when they shoot in there, you know, film in there. But my point is that the quill froze his powers. It didn't take them away. I don't remember them saying it would remove them completely. He wouldn't be stripped of his powers.
Right.
And just like he told, or just like Maleficent told Evil Queen that there's always something that breaks the curse. Right?
Right.
So something eventually is going to give him his powers back, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. So let's kind of make a list. Okay, so the magic tree, the bars in Rumpelstiltskin's cell, and possibly the quill. All right, may be part of this magical tree.
Possibly, but while the quill would belong to a bird...
Right, but maybe the pen part. Anyway,
the pen is, there's no pen part. It's literally a single quill. It's a feather from a
See, that's
bird.
Why I have her on the show because,
I know.
You know, I'm thinking about 20th century, you know, pens. And she's going, no, Jeff, it's just,
just a single feather.
See, that's why she's here. She helps
bird.
Me. Okay, so Sheriff Grimm,
yeah,
he's saying possibly Pinocchio.
Which is a fascinating mm-hmm. observation as well, mm-hmm. because, yeah, I mean, all this time I've really been thinking he's the huntsman. I mean, I still kind of do, but then, you know, there's definite possibility for him to be Pinocchio. I mean, you're right, with why was Marco Geppetto in the jail?
Yep, they may work together. They may be friends. He's a sheriff. He wouldn't lie. I mean, right?
Well, Pinocchio told lies, but then again, he became a real boy once he made a sacrifice. So, I mean, we don't know. I mean, it'd be really fascinating to see if, you know, he turns out to be Pinocchio. That would mm-hmm. be kind of interesting.
So we'll be definitely watching because, really quick is that let's roll through each episode and their origin stories.
Okay.
So sorry to kind of cut in here and do this, but I'm going somewhere. So episode one was which origin story?
It was Emma.
Emma.
It was the story of her birth and mm-hmm. what happened to her and how she became who she is.
Right. Episode two was which origin story?
That was Evil Queen. That mm-hmm. was the thing you love most, and that was the Evil Queen's story. Mm-hmm. Her backstory of how she became, well, not so much how she became, but it was really what kind of prompted her to do the
later core of right, what she did and why. Right, yeah.
The crux of
the big kahuna curse,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, third episode.
Third was Snow Falls, which was
Snow White,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It yep. was her and Prince Charming, how they met.
Yeah, yeah, but basically it was Snow White.
Right.
Yeah. Fourth
episode. Was Rumpelstiltskin.
Cinderella.
No, you're right, Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Sorry, Cinderella, you're right. And then five was Jiminy Cricket.
So from what we understand, next episode is going to be Prince Charming.
Yes.
So Sheriff Graham should not be too far behind.
I would think he'd be coming in upcoming episodes, yeah.
You had mentioned something interesting about we love Lost and maybe we look at this show too much like Lost, but you were saying that this reminds you of Lost because of what?
Well, right. Okay. So in season one of Lost, for those of you that are fans and know it very well, you'll know exactly where I'm going with this. We see the stories and the kind of the backstories. I call backstories, everyone else calls origin stories, but backstories of the main characters, the good guys, right? Then episode two pops up and it's all of a sudden the others. It's all about the others, which were the bad guys.
Right.
So I kind of think season one here, maybe let's set up all the good guys and season two, we start seeing the baddies.
Mm-hmm.
Because like we've said, okay, well, we saw Maleficent, but where is she?
Right, right.
She's nowhere. She hasn't popped up yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And the blind witch, we saw her briefly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where is she?
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see the baddies more heavily in season two.
So
that's my guess.
ABC, please pick up five seasons so we can see all the story. Maybe 10. Anyhow, so what I was getting at is if we don't see Sheriff Graham's origin story this first season,
right,
it's going to be very interesting.
It would be very interesting. And so, it may not, and this is just speculation, they may not go that route.
Yeah.
But it would totally make sense because that's kind of how things went on Lost. And it makes sense. You look at the good guys first, then you look at the bad guys, then you have the battle, you know, the start of the battle, and then you get towards resolution.
Ruby. One of my more favorite subjects.
Oh, yes.
So he does bring up a good point.
Yeah.
And all these different stories that they're dealing with, there's a twist in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And it's different.
Absolutely.
It's not exactly
what we thought. It's not what you think. And you're right. And he is very right that mm-hmm. she has a little bit of a thing for the wolf. I mean, she made a production out of, hey, Billy, you're going to crush my wolf, you know. And
mm-hmm.
and Little Red Riding Hood, she wasn't thrilled with the wolf. So it is kind of an interesting little twist. So maybe she does have a little bit of a thing for the wolf. And maybe we'll find out that the wolf was actually a guy. You know, kind of similar how we saw with Jiminy Cricket. He was just a normal guy. He had a pretty rough upbringing. And then he decided he didn't want to do that anymore. And so he made the choice to become a cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe the wolf, maybe he didn't do some good things, and he got turned into a wolf.
Well, I definitely think you're on the right track, though, with that observation about the wolf, definitely, and the relationship between Ruby.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I'm just kind of noticing all these different stories. It mirrors Lost in that if they're good now, they may not have been good before, and so we see that.
Or vice versa.
Right. Correct. So now it's it's all good. Thanks so much for your voicemail.
Exactly.
And we have one more.
Excellent.
Hey, this is Dave from Michigan. I am a big fan of the show, and I went out looking for a podcast, and I found you guys, and you guys remind me of one of the best Lost podcasts that I listened to for the entire run of the series. So I am glad that I found you guys early on in this series, instead of not having to play catch-up. I'm calling for two reasons. The first is to agree with the crazy theory from last week's episode about time travel. And in answer to your question, why did he let them arrest him and put him in prison, is because he knew that he'd have to be there for the Wicked Queen to find him easily and give him what he wanted in the changed world. And he learned the name of the daughter so that he could wind up needing a favor from her. He may not time travel, but he may know the future. And so that is my thought as to what it is he can do and why he doesn't. The other thing is, to the end of today's episode, where you go down the mine shaft and see what's down there, and it's a very disturbing looking picture. I can't really tell what it is. However, I do have a theory, because it's glass and it's got the wood and stuff on it. I think it may have been the Snow White coffin. The one that we saw her in the beginning. The only other option since the pinwheel was in the opening of the show, like you've been talking about the ones that are out there, perhaps it's another coffin that has Sleeping Beauty inside. So just a couple of thoughts for you guys to go on the discussion about, and I'm really, really glad I found the podcast. So thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dave, so much.
Thank you. Yeah. We're excited to have people enjoy this.
Honestly, we have the coolest listeners in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are incredible voicemails. Some of the emails I'm going to be reading and the little posts here and there is just awesome, incredible. So let's talk about Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, definitely.
So I think you're right on the money.
Absolutely.
In that they're... It's funny. This show reminds me of a mystery dinner.
A little bit,
and
yeah.
And when you arrive, you know there's going to be these types of people that play these different roles. And part of the fun is seeing how they play. Who is the bad guy? Who's the good guy? What do they do? And then the mystery of, you know, the crime,
well,
right?
And it's all in... If you've ever been to dinner mystery, I've actually hosted them before many years ago when I was young. And one of the things is that it's all in the questions you ask.
Right.
And giving the answer, just enough of an answer to satisfy the answer or the question that's being asked without giving too much away. So, for example, when they're in the hospital, when Ashley's giving birth, and Emma basically makes a deal with Rumpelstiltskin, he didn't specify what that favor was.
Right.
It could be anything.
Right.
And in her mind, it could be, loan me $20. I don't think but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Bottom line is, she's not thinking like he's thinking, because he's got a little more devious mind than she does. She's innocently thinking, okay, yeah, I'm going to help him out with something. He's thinking, nah, and it's very likely to be... But it's all in the innocence of favor.
I know that I believe that she has him all pretty much figured out. And
I think she does.
Yeah.
But on the same token, she doesn't believe that he is who he is. So if she...
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
So if she believed that he really was Rumpelstiltskin and believed that he had any kind of power of any sort, she wouldn't have made that deal with him.
We'll talk about power in a little bit.
Yes, we will.
So Rumpelstiltskin.
But bottom line is that analysis is fantastic.
Absolutely.
When he was saying that, I was sitting there going, oh,
yeah,
that is brilliant.
Lost,
it really is.
Lost created a perfection out of people being in the right place at the right time,
yes,
making certain things look a certain way to certain people and all that. And I think you're right on the money, Dave, that Rumpelstiltskin was put there for Snow White to come and visit because they knew that he sees a future.
And
that's what she saw. Yeah. That's what she said. And so, you know, then they asked for some help. He saw the future. He gave them that information. Then he got Emma's name. And the minute you said that, Dave, I was like, I remember when he met Emma, he said, Emma. It was interesting the way
very
he said her name.
Oh, like, very much so.
I found you. I got you.
He knew it was her.
And definitely he knows the future. And so let's kind of talk a bit about this. In this episode, Regina says that the area of Storybrooke is honeycombed with mine shafts or tunnels.
Right.
So my thinking is that there are shafts like the air shaft, and we'll talk about where it leads in just a little bit, is that there are places that will go down that you can come back and forth with. And I have this crazy theory that he can pop up out of that cell up to Storybrooke and then kind of wander around. And kooky theory, but that's what I think.
It is a wacky theory, but it's not totally far-fetched knowing how these people who write Lost, you know, who've written this show and are writing it and are involved, it's not totally far-fetched.
Yep. But I think you're right on the money with him being in the right place at the right time or in a place where he can be found.
Right.
And that's excellent. And let's see, what was the next point? I forgot.
Oh, my goodness.
The coffin. Yes. Snow White's coffin.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And that statement you made was actually very much bandied about. That some people did not think that was Snow White's coffin and all this. And it really goes back to what we were talking about last time.
Yeah.
Is that Storybrooke is over the enchanted forest, the fairy tale land. And so my theory is that all the important places have some type of a tunnel down to it.
A portal of connection somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, no, you're absolutely correct. It is Snow White's coffin. And that was actually confirmed by Jane
Espenson?
Yes.
She's the one of the
Yes,
writers.
And she confirmed that on Twitter.
Excellent.
So, excellent observation, man. Just some really cool voicemails. I gotta tell you. So,
well, yeah. Go ahead.
No, just awesome. Thank you.
Yes.
Keep calling in. We appreciate it.
We do.
We're going to go through the connections.
Yes.
And so the beginning,
there were a ton of them in this episode.
Oh yeah, all kinds, and some that might make me misty. This is probably the most, to me, emotionally charged episode.
Yeah,
thus far.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was watching Snow White after she gave up Emma, and that was tugging.
Oh, that was heart wrenching.
But this one was, I don't want to say my favorite episode because I think there's plenty more coming. But in the beginning, in the puppet show. Jiminy's mom said, "I wish, but nothing changes." And I think that's at the core, one of the cores of this show is wishing and change.
Yeah.
You know, and some people say when you wish something, doesn't change anything. It's just a wish, just whatever.
Right.
But we can see that a wish for the right reason in the right situation can change.
Absolutely.
And people can take steps to change.
Which, by the way, did you catch that his parents were puppeteers?
I didn't, no.
And actually, to be more specific, it was, what was his dad's name? Like Monty and Martha or Myrna's.
Right.
Yeah. Marvelous Marionettes, which, by the way, in Pinocchio, Stromboli was the marionette master.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they used the word marionette rather than puppet because I don't know why, but the marionette and puppet are essentially the same thing, but marionette is an older, more old world word for that.
Yep. I just want to mention this really quick, and then we'll move on, is that sometimes when we have the idea about what if you had three wishes, right?
Yeah.
We'd all say, I want $1 million, I want perfect health, and I want seven more wishes, right?
Right.
That's the thing. And I think what's interesting, especially here, is the wishes had more weight. There was a reason. At the end, when Jiminy wishes to be different, she kind of goes back and forth, the blue fairy, and then she says, there's going to be a boy that needs your help. And so it was kind of, I'll do this, well, but here's why.
But like you said, I think what you said before made a lot of sense, because look, wishing is fine and dandy. I wish for $1 million.
Right.
Okay. Seriously. But when you wish for something that is actually a benefit to not just yourself, but to other people, that's where I think these fairy tale wishes come true.
Right.
Right. Because
there's a wish and having a wish granted. That's two different things.
Well, yeah. But again, it comes back to your wishing is really what are you really truly wishing for, or what are you really hoping for?
Right.
Because I think there's a difference between I wish I had $1 million and hoping you get something. There's a huge difference. And I think even though he may have used the word I wish, it was really he had hope.
Mm-hmm.
There was a spark of hope because he was determined that he didn't want to do that anymore.
If I remember right, I remember reading something about the writers that said that basically they wanted to write something that gave people hope.
Well, there you
have. And that is really, I was rewatching it again today, and it was like, it felt good to watch it. And I was like, this is so good. Anyway.
It is.
So Jiminy's parents, to me, when I first saw him, I said, it's Honest John.
Oh, it is.
From Pinocchio. In the Pleasure Island.
And the fox.
Actor's
the
life. Yeah.
The fox friend. And I can't remember his name, but yeah.
Yeah. Hi, oh diddle-dee-dee, and Actor's Life for me, but, and all this kind of stuff.
Well, and I noticed it too, because at first, the funny thing is, until you pointed that out to me, I got to be honest, you know what I thought of? I honestly thought of his mother's hair reminded me of the way Helena Bonham Carter had hers in Sweeney Todd.
Mm-hmm.
It was very wackadoodle and kind of unusual. But when you pointed out, it looks like Honest John and the Fox. And I'm going to have to look that up because it's driving me nuts now. But it totally, when you said that, I'm like, oh, light bulb. Yeah, her hair looks like fox ears.
Yep. I double checked their little carriage with Stromboli's carriage, and it was different, but anyway.
Slightly different, but even their clothing was very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
The top hat, the scruffy beard. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he's got a cape, and yeah. So, Jiminy said crickets can do whatever they want. They're free to hop from place to place, and then that I'll insert my crazy theory about old Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah.
He can pop in and out and flip here and there and all this kind of stuff, so...
I think his name was J. Worthington Foulfellow. That could be him, possibly.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and also Jiminy's parents tell Jiminy that he's free to do whatever he's free to do whatever they want.
Right.
And you are who you are and all this kind of stuff. So it's really set up like he's trapped.
Yeah.
You know. And that's really the core of it. And good is another word for weak. And I also noticed in the puppet show that this good knight was going to go and save this woman. And when he's facing the dragon, he basically goes, and I'm going to go that way. And no. And they go, who disturbs my sleep? The dragon. And then the knight says, I think he went that way. And see, the good knight was weak.
Mm-hmm.
Did not face the challenge of the dragon.
Right.
And they were showing that off.
Right.
And so kind of sad, you know.
Yeah, very sad.
But it's interesting because we already know that evil curses can be broken. And, you know, even though, you know, the evil is kind of set like, oh, you know, this is a curse and it's fearful and all this. But, you know, good... Even just one good action, you know, and there's a number of them, but the one good action when Emma put on that sheriff badge.
Right.
Which was another step toward her destiny, that began to erode away this curse.
Right.
And cause this crater and expose the mine shaft and all that.
Well, and Henry even said she's weakening the curse.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, here's this little 10-year-old boy who's pretty wise and he gets it. So.
Yep. So his parents tell Jiminy to let them do the thinking for him. And Jiminy's parents really control his actions, just as Regina controls Archie's actions at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's a very similar existence for the two. And then, you know, one of the things that, it was really cool is Archie Hopper asked Henry, why do you believe that I'm Jiminy Cricket? And Henry just kind of looks at me, because it's who you are. You're a conscience. But it's interesting because...
You help people figure out right from wrong.
Right. And it's interesting. It's not just knowing who you are, but I think sometimes it's listening to the right people if you don't know. Mm-hmm. Because his parents were saying, well, you are who you are, and you're like us.
Right.
You're good at it. You're doing all this stuff. But it takes somebody who's maybe out of the picture to say, no, you're a conscience. You know? And that was just really cool. You know? And there's...
You're more than this.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. But Henry's done it a lot. He has his gift of, you know, whatever you want to call it.
He's very precocious.
Precocious, but he can see through the mist and he sees the truth about people.
True. He absolutely does. But I think that's partly because he has no guile, no agenda. He's not trying to get anything from anybody. He just wants everybody to have their happy endings again. He wants them to live happily ever after.
But let's think about all the different things. He told Emma she was brave.
Yep.
She said Regina was evil.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that Archie is a conscience.
He said, yeah.
And so all this, you know, he, yeah. So,
well, he's a conscience, but he's actually like a compass, almost a moral compass a little bit, pointing out.
Well, he was Jiminy's Jiminy.
Yeah, he was. He kind of was, yeah.
Yeah, but Archie Jiminy. Yes. So Archie tells Henry to keep thinking about why he believes the curse is real, because something is buried there. And, of course, that kind of alludes to the crater that was...
something is buried there?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What was at the bottom of the shaft?
Right.
A coffin,
mm-hmm.
which is usually
true.
Buried.
So Emma challenged the outer trappings of the deputy outfit. And, you know, I think this is talking about the outer. Does the outer show the inner you? Is it important that you wear a suit to look a certain part? And what I really love is the most important, the thing that had the power was the badge.
Mm-hmm.
Not the suit, not the tie.
No, right.
The badge. And when she put the badge on, that's when it happened. So yeah. It was really cool.
I don't know if this means anything, but it just struck me. He referred to her as red. He said something about your red coat. Said something about red coat.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, tuck that away for future reference.
Yep. Yep. So what I noticed, especially now, is actions toward their destiny, a person's destiny and responsibility, cause actions in the real world. So I made a list of, and another thing I want to really, really highlight this time is the armies are starting to build.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of talked about the little mystery dinner, but I'm saying it now, like the armies are taking shape. And so the people now are finding out who they are. When they find out who they are, they're taking their place to stand against the evil curse.
Right.
And to take her out, take out the evil queen's plot.
Mm-hmm.
And so Emma staying in Storybrooke.
Right.
Started the whole sequence because everyone was there.
Just committing to staying there for a week.
Yep.
Started the clock again.
So that began the clock to the final battle.
Right.
And then Emma's deal for a future favor for Mr. Gold brought Sean to Ashley.
Right.
So that was another thing. The third is Emma accepting the deputy badge. And it was interesting that Sheriff Graham said, become a part of the community. You have to make this official.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you go back to the hero's journey, it's not just saying you'll go, but it's actually going, and it's actually facing all the different things along the way.
Right.
So, and based on the badge, putting it on, accepting responsibility, making it official, that's when the crater formed, and that's when the rest of the story took off. And then also when Archie stood up to Regina and said, no, I'm going to follow my conscience. I'm going to... You do your worst. I'm going to do my best. And that's the way it's going to be.
And right. He kind of almost a little bit, which I thought was really funny, almost blackmailed her. And it wasn't that he blackmailed her. He basically, he manipulated her the way she'd been manipulating him. Because he preyed upon her worst fear right now. Right?
Yep.
That's what I think.
So... I also wanted to bring this out too, as I was watching it again right before we recorded, and I was noticing that Archie's moving towards change for himself kind of caused these little tremors and earthquakes.
Yeah, every time he took a step towards or made it seem as if he was starting to maybe buy into what Henry was saying, that's when little tremors happened. Yeah.
Because especially when he and Henry were in the elevator, you could see his face.
Oh, that totally.
He was like, you know, when Henry was saying, you know, you can do this, you can be good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, maybe I can.
That was that spark of hope.
Right.
That changed from a wish to hope.
Yep. And just in my own notes, I said, "Does Mary Margaret Blanchard's actions of resigning undo an action toward the final battle?"
See, I don't think so.
Okay,
I don't think so, and here's why: because remember in the episode where we see their backstory of how they met, when they're done with the troll bridge, he goes in his direction to go with his fiance, and she goes off to do her own thing. I think that was when she resigned, that was the same thing as her. They've met, they kind of talked, they kind of flirted a little bit. That's what happened in story, you know, fairy tale land. When she resigned, that was her turning away and going opposite from where he was. Cause he was going, she's trying to push him towards his wife.
Okay. So it's almost making it, cause I think it's more,
the destiny.
What's more romantic that someone looks for someone.
Oh, sure.
And it's not as easy that they're always there, and it's more romantic and all that. Okay.
Right.
All right. So I wanted to talk about the air shaft and the hatch.
Okay.
Now, I see similarities all over the place.
Oh, sure.
Between this air shaft or elevator shaft and the swan hatch. And, you know, a couple of the things are, it was cleared off and found and there was explosives.
Exactly. I was going to say the explosives was a huge thing.
And when they looked down, there was this long, long passageway down.
Where you couldn't really see the bottom.
Right. And the two people that were lower down were females.
Mm-hmm.
Kate was lower down first for the hatch.
Right.
And then, Emma was lower down for the air shaft where the elevator was.
Right.
So I put on a couple of videos and pictures on the blog. And just to let everybody know, this is the podcast, obviously, but then there's kind of an accompanying blog. Because I know some people don't like to listen and they'd rather read. So that's what we're going off of tonight. So I wanted to talk about kids in Storybrooke.
Okay.
There are kids at Henry School.
Yes.
There were kids around the sinkhole or the crater there.
Yeah, yeah.
But Henry doesn't commiserate, talk to, hang around kids. He's by himself, bookworm.
He tends to gravitate towards the adults.
Right. So I just...
And again, he's precocious for a 10-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't talk like a normal 10-year-old. He's much more intelligent than most 10-year-olds. He talks about things that most 10-year-olds wouldn't have a clue about.
I also
He's older than and wiser than his years.
Well, and he might he might not be a kid either. He might be an older, anyway, possibly.
Yeah, and we've had that little minor discussion about, well, wait a second, who is he in Fairy Tale
World?
Who
is he? Right.
Well, but he wouldn't be anybody in Fairy Tale World because he was born outside of Fairy Tale
World. True, he's born in Phoenix. Yep, yep. So, and we were also talking that the people that could leave for a period of time were the people that were brought into this world, but not in Storybrooke. So Emma,
right? Emma's not from Storybrooke.
Well, no, she was on the side of the road.
But the funny thing is, she never said what side of what road. We're assuming it was.
Okay.
Look, all right. You and I both know it was on the side of the road at Storybrooke. But does she know that that's
fair
where
enough.
It was?
Okay.
We know that's the case, but she never said. I don't remember anybody saying where, which side of which road, what town, where.
Yep.
So there's that. But the interesting thing about the whole town itself. So we've seen superfluous characters walking around in the background and stuff, and we've commented on the fact that those are the Nikki and Paulos of
the lost people that carry the wood, and right. it's like some production assistant. Hey, can I be on the film? You know, and they just grab some sticks and kind of walk in the background. We thought there was 7 or 8 people on this island, and then we find the tail section. Like, but there's always like 1,000 people in the background. Anyway,
but what's interesting to me, though, what's very interesting to me, and they haven't said anything, and maybe they'll allude to it at some point in time, but there aren't any real visitors to Storybrooke.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tourism, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost like it doesn't exist. And how she got there, which to me is fascinating, is she got there because Henry brought her there.
Hmm.
She wouldn't have gone to Storybrooke, Maine on her own.
That's a great point. Yep. Yep.
So it's interesting.
So I was listening to Father Roderick's Once Upon a Time podcast. Mm-hmm. It's called The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
Okay.
I'll put the link up in the show notes. Father Roderick has been a podcaster for a long time. Friend of mine, I've called into his show and listened to all the cool stuff he does. And they were discussing the time frame that Storybrooke was in. Because the cars were not brand new cars, and the Emma's phone isn't an iPhone, and not many people have cell phones. Only she does, and the only computer in town, as far as we can tell, is Regina's house, and that kind of a thing. And I got a crazy theory, and I was like 2011, and I took 28 away from it, and it's 1983.
Right.
So I'm pegging it that Storybrooke was frozen in time, 1983.
Interesting theory. Well, and if you look at some of the clothing that they're wearing, it is kind of very similar to how they would have dressed in 1983.
Now, the only thing that really kind of blows my whole theory is the computer looks like it has a user interface that's more recent. Because in 1983, it did not.
Right.
And so anyway. Could be a crazy theory, but I'm throwing it out there.
You never know.
So there were certain things along the line about Archie was telling Regina, I think it's wrong to rip away the world that he's constructed. And that was very interesting because this is the world that the Evil Queen constructed.
Right.
To keep out the happy endings and the characters from their world.
Right. Well, and if you remember how she invoked the curse in the first place, kind of basically melted actually a windstorm kind of ripped away the Storybrooke layer.
And how it's being undone is the opposite. The parts are being ripped away or falling down Hey everybody, I just wanted to remind you there's a number of great ways that you can stay connected to the show and get involved. So the first thing is there's a great Facebook fan page. It's at facebook.com/OUAT podcast. There's also our website. It's at onceuponatimepodcast.com. If you want to leave a voicemail, the number is 657-333-0626. Our email is oncepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at OUAT Podcast. Thanks for listening, and let's stay connected. On with the show. The little boy. Now, at first, I didn't want to think the little boy that was with the young couple that were puppetized, that was Jiminy, or I'm sorry, that was Geppetto. I didn't think that at first. But then I was watching the other episodes, and I noticed that Geppetto did have a little scarf tied around his neck, which, like the little boy.
Pinocchio, if I remember correctly, does in the movie, too.
Okay.
Or not Pinocchio, Geppetto.
Okay.
Geppetto had one in the movie.
So then I've come back into the camp that it is Geppetto.
It's Geppetto. So. There's no question about it.
But it was really...
The Blue Fairy even said it was Geppetto.
No. Find the little boy.
Right. But okay, so it's way too obvious because his parents...
Well, that's why I didn't go for it.
His parents were turned into wood carvings.
I
understand.
I get that. But it was too obvious and I went, it can't be that obvious.
It's that obvious.
So... Because I grew up reading Hercule Poirot and all kinds of things, and I just never felt comfortable going with the most obvious, because it was always, you know, even Scooby-Doo taught you, it's not the obvious. It's always the weird guy you saw in the first 2 minutes of the show. Anyway.
Correct. Which we did.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, but I thought it was really interesting that Archie and Jiminy, before the transformation, had Jiminy Crickets in their lives.
Yeah.
Telling them, you know, good positive affirmations. Like the little boy, when he gave him the umbrella, he goes, you know, if you don't like it, you can change it. If you don't like your life or what you're doing, do something different.
Right.
Oh, I can't. Why not? You know what I mean? And that's nice. And it's nice coming from younger people. You know, because old people are like, oh, I can't do anything. Oh, my life is awful. And little kids go, no. Little kids have hope. Little kids have dreams.
They do.
So that's great. Great stuff.
The children are our future.
Treat them well. And okay. Anyway.
Let's move on.
The Apollo candy bar is definite lost. Connection.
Yeah, the candy bar that Henry had in the mine shaft with him, yeah.
And there's really a theme through Storybrooke is that they're frozen in time, but there's also little things like they're asleep. They're awake, but they're asleep, because Archie tells Henry, you have to stop this for your own good. You have to wake up.
Right.
And it was actually Archie that was asleep.
Right.
He needed to wake up. He needed to realize that he could be good.
Right.
That he could be the man he wanted to be. That's what he kept saying. I'm not the man I want to be. So.
Which, and then if you really want to take this even further, it's pretty much the same thing as Snow White's curse.
True.
She was asleep.
Yeah. Right.
Sleeping Beauty.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yep. So, David Nolan, when he was playing Hangman with Mary Margaret, Blanchard mentioned a horse. And that's kind of how they...
Right, how they first met.
Involved in...
He would draw toes, a hat, maybe even a horse.
Yep. And then it was funny, during their little walk, and I thought that, look, I'm a guy, I like things that blow up, I like action movies, but I thought their little exchanges was some of the cutest. Say what you will. But I thought it was cute, and I thought it was really tender and nice.
It was very sweet.
You know, and it was flirting with her. And
he was a blossoming romance.
Yeah. And I thought it was really, really cool.
It was very sweet.
And that's what I really like about this show. It reminded me of The Fisher King when the, what's that guy's name? The comedian.
Jeff Bridges, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams walked his date to the door and she said, and you're going to come up to my room and then you'll never call and then I'll just be hurt the rest of my life. And he says, I haven't even kissed you yet. I'm here for noble reasons. I really care about you. And it's things like that where you forget that love is sweet, you know, and get to know somebody is... It's really fun and cool. And I think a lot of times we get so jaded.
Right.
You know, and that's where I really, that's why I think this show is really hitting a nerve. Because I think people love fairy tales, but they also forgotten that love can be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you watch enough, you know, Maury and Jerry Springer and all this weirdness and just wacky stuff, and you go, man, does love exist anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, it's a reminder that people can be good and you can change, and fairy tales sometimes come true, you know, wishes and dreams, you know?
Yeah.
So, I like this show, if you can't tell.
Yes.
So, the Nolan's dog name was Ajax, and I was thinking Ajax, the name Jax.
Oh, wow.
So, but you were saying that it looked like Vincent.
Yeah, it totally. Yeah. I think if it wasn't a picture of the actual dog who played Vincent, whose real name was Madison, by the way, and lived with, and I think still does, with Matthew Fox and his wife, that was the same. It's the same breed. It's a golden retriever. So it's, you know, no, a golden lab. Sorry, golden lab.
Emma warns Mary Margaret from getting involved with a Mary guy. So I was wondering if we were to assume
that
a married man was Henry's father.
Well, and what I think was interesting is she said, believe me, I know, or trust me, I know. And then Mary Margaret kind of looked at her funny, which tells me that, yeah, I'm guessing that he was a married man.
You know, or it could have been maybe a mistake along the way that she made or something like that. So anyway.
Possibly.
I just want to bring that out.
Yeah.
So Mary Margaret made s'mores. I'll just say, just kind of file that away somewhere. We may see it again. Like cinnamon. I don't know. So.
Marshmallows and, yeah.
So Rumpelstiltskin wanted the names of the people that Archie stole the money from for the gold thread.
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting, too. I caught that this time. I didn't catch it first time. But I did see it when we watched it again, and I thought that was really interesting. And didn't he write it down on a piece of paper and set it on top?
Yeah,
so
he
never even actually said, which I...
Right. No, it was on a piece of paper on top. So it's almost like connections to people.
Well, and the whole thing is, you know what I think this is? I mean, if you think about this... Okay, so we said this earlier. If he was trying to get Emma's name so that he could figure out who she was to make sure he was there for the curse, then it stands to reason that if Jiminy Cricket and his family were stealing from these people, then... And he was turning around giving that stuff to Rumpelstiltskin, then it stands to reason that he wanted those names so he could go back to those people and then put them, basically, they all owe him something. Because he returns their property, and as a favor, I'll come collect later.
Okay.
So he could be setting himself up for all kinds of things for later.
And, and connections to people. Definitely something. And I'm just wondering if Archie worked for Rumpelstiltskin. You know, we weren't...
You mean Mr. Gold?
No, Rumpelstiltskin.
Archie wouldn't have worked for him.
Jiminy worked for him. Rumpelstiltskin. Or were there other people bringing other things throughout the day, night, whatever?
Well, see, that's the thing. Okay, so he's in the room, he's spinning. Which, by the way, on a little side note, the floor in that room where he was in the... The pattern on the floor was a spider web.
Yep.
Which is very interesting because that's very much like who he is. He's a spider waiting for flies to come into his trap. But what I'm thinking is that I don't know if he worked for him necessarily, or if somehow, somewhere along the way, you know, Rumpelstiltskin basically offered his services and said, I can offer you something more valuable than what you're stealing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're taking these things because, again, they're taking things that seem to be valuable, but some of that stuff didn't look like it was really worth that much. But he's given them literally threads out of gold, solid gold thread.
Yep.
Which is a big deal, right? And would be worth a lot of money.
Yep.
So that's why I'm saying I think that's what it is. He's collecting people and collecting favors.
Okay.
He's like trying to own them. In a way.
There sorry, there's a lot of other things that we could go through. I want to kind of hit on two more subjects, and then we're out of here. We're only at 55 minutes. And
oh, my goodness.
It's been really cool. So the first thing is I want to talk about when Archie said, let me ask you one more time. Why do you believe that this curse is real?
Mm-hmm.
And Henry turned and said, because he says, I don't know, because this can't be all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And I was floored. I said, you know, that really is the core of, I think, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're religious or not or whatever, there's something in all of us that says, you know, this getting up and going to work 5 days a week or doing whatever every day over and over and over and over and over, there's got to be more. Mm-hmm. And that's why people get involved with charities or different things or passions in life and all this.
Well, and conversely, get addicted to things.
Right.
Because
true.
They're, you know, they are looking for some sort of escape.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, I think that you're right. I think that's inherent with all of us. There has to be something more, because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah. And in this land of Storybrooke, it was frozen in time. And so they were just kind of going through the motions every day.
Right.
No visitors.
Robotic.
You know, and one of the Hillary in the fan page, she asked a question. She goes, so you mean Ashley was pregnant for 28 years? And I say, yes. It was frozen in time. There was no passage of time.
Hmm.
And then once Emma came to town, that's when the clock began to move, and then Ashley was giving birth.
Yeah, maybe.
So, that's kind of where I hang my theory on.
It's a wackadoodle thought process, but it could very well be the case.
And I think all these people are waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, along with the theory of Henry says, there's got to be more. This can't be all there is. And so these people are realizing, you know, when they realize who they really are in the book, you know, again, that's another religious, you know, subtext there. But then these people are waking up, and now they're going to start to amass this army.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, there's some more cool things. Oh my gosh, we could talk about Emma being the savior, going down and rescuing Henry and Archie. You know, and there's so much in, you know, in the Bible that talks about, you know, the Lord reached down in a pit and rescued people out, and you know, people believe in the rapture and all this. But it was neat to see the Savior be the Savior.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was really, really, really cool, because the sheriff could have gone down there.
Well, I think he was too heavy. That's the whole point. He was too heavy for the rope. It's not his place to do that. And maybe he was trying to let her, you know, maybe because he's so compassionate, if he is the huntsman, he's so compassionate towards Snow White, he's compassionate towards her, in that he wants her, he sees the conflict between her and Regina and wants to give her the opportunity to show that she can do something really good so that Regina doesn't constantly think she's bad. One more little piece about that whole like area is, after the fact, we saw at the beginning where Regina picked up the piece of glass with the, when I first saw that, I went, that's significant. And I didn't quite catch what it was at first. Then when I saw what Henry pulled out of the rock, which was again, the piece of the coffin that actually started the whole like chain of events where he got trapped in there. And then again, at the end, when I saw that Regina pulled it out of her pocket and she dropped it down the shaft, that to me told me, once I realized what it was, I knew that when she'd picked it up in the first place, she knows. She knows who she is. She knows exactly what's going on. She is trying desperately to prevent it. But I think she may be kind of confined to certain like rules of the game, so to speak, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to tip her hand too much.
Well, it is interesting that she knows who she is, but nobody else.
But then she invoked the curse, so naturally she would know who she is. Mm-hmm. I think Mr. Gold knows who he is, too.
Yep.
I'm pretty confident of that.
I also want to say this, that there was a cool guy who asked me to get a little help. He has a really cool Once Upon a Time fan website, and he wants people that have fan art or fan creations to let him know. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a link to his site. And if you're a fan that draws or creates images or whatever you do, fan art, go to his website and check him out, and let him know I sent you, and get hooked up. He's got a great site. If I remember right, I believe that Henry in the show, his father actually signed up to be a part of the site too. It's free, cool. But there's a registration process.
Nice.
So the last thing I want to talk about is I don't think Regina has magical power.
No, she has no power.
Okay.
She's the mayor, but she does though. She's the evil queen.
But to me, I was thinking about it, and it reminded me of Hogan's Heroes, where all the people are doing all this stuff right under her nose, and she says she knows, right? She can stroll into the little diner and sit down and say, "How's your cocoa?" She knows that, but she doesn't know where Henry is. He's always lost. She can't rescue him. She cannot change his mind. She can't get rid of this theory about the curse and all this kind of stuff. She really doesn't have that much power.
She doesn't have nearly as much power as she likes to say. But remember, at the very, very beginning, this whole entire show, she's there at the wedding and she threatens, "This is your last happy day."
Right.
Well, as we all know, that wasn't the last happy day. She didn't have the curse. And Maleficent even said, "What are you talking about? You can't do this curse. You don't even have it." So I think she talks a good game. She's got a lot of talk. She's a lot of bark. She has very little bite. But here's the thing. Her saying, "How's your cocoa?" Yeah, enjoy your cocoa. She saw her sitting there with the cocoa cup in front of her. That's not like, you know, rocket science. Anybody could see that. Oh, but she said, "Well, did you have a nice walk with Henry?" Yeah, she was probably parked outside waiting, you know.
Right.
Probably saw them walking down the street. So it's not rocket science. She just happens to be in the right place at the right time. That's the other thing. Again, ties back to what we said before. Right place at the right time. I think that's how she manages to get a lot of the information she's got, if that makes any sense.
Yep. And one of the folks that have sent in some really cool emails, and I wasn't going to say it because it's almost like it's a spoiler, but it's not. And I think, let's see here. So the idea is that two things really quick. He wrote a really cool quiz about Once Upon a Time, and I want to put a link to it because it was really cool. There's all kinds of different influences and all kinds of different questions, so I want to put a link to that in the show notes. But he also mentioned that he followed out the idea that if, in fact, Emma is the savior, which she's called that in the show a number of times, that she will end up dying to break the curse at the end.
Okay. And I started, and at first I was like, no way. And then I went, no, actually that makes sense, because she would have to die, because when she breaks the curse, it'll be back to the day she was born.
Hmm.
So she's not really dying.
Mm-hmm.
She's just metamorphosing. Or even more importantly, oh, ding, ding, light bulb. Where did she give birth to Henry? Phoenix.
Right.
And if you know the story of the phoenix, the bird dies and becomes ashes, and then it's born out of the ashes again. So for her, if she is the savior, truly the way a normal savior would have to work, then yes, she, this Emma form that she's in now, would have to die, and she'll just be reborn as the baby, right?
Right.
Ding, ding.
So
excellent theory.
Yep. So, David, thank you for the quiz, and thank you for the theory about the savior. I think there's weight to it, and I wasn't going to say anything. I mean, he gets credit for it, but it was just like I'm almost spoiling it. But I mean, that's where you go.
No, but
when
that
you
is
start
where you
talking
go.
About Savior and you kind of walk in a more Christian view of a Savior, but I think even heroes, some of
heroes.
The stories, mm-hmm. they die after they've rescued whoever Hi. Or whatever.
Braveheart.
Right.
Gladiator.
So.
I'm sure there are a lot more we're not even thinking of.
I do not want to stop, but we have to.
I know.
Okay.
We could go another hour easily, but I think that would probably make people crazy.
I want to thank everyone who listens to this mm-hmm. show. And we are listening to you. We really appreciate your feedback. And please keep it coming. Please keep the emails coming, the visits to the fan page, the voicemails.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to let you know it's very important that we are now on iTunes.
Yay.
So you can subscribe on iTunes. And we would ask that you please review and leave some reviews.
Comments, feedback.
Some comments and that kind of a thing there, please. But we're going to end it here, and the next episode is going to deal with the next episode of Once Upon a Time, which involves a dragon, which could answer some questions and things that we've been discussing.
Yeah.
About the dragon that we've seen before.
Well, remember in the teaser, the trailer for next week's episode, Prince Charming has to battle a dragon.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Okay, awesome. We got to go. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
We really, really love this show, and we love the fact that you love it, too. And we're all getting together to talk and communicate about it. So thanks so much again, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.